Welcome to another episode of the Photo Facts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
Rode Microphones designs and manufactures high-quality microphones for studio, live, and location recording and performance. Rode.com. Hello there. Hey, welcome back to another episode. I just said that, didn't I?
You did just say that.
I did, yeah. Well, I'm glad to be back, Robert. What about you?
I am excited to be back because we have a very special guest that is a huge friend of the show.
Yeah, and he's a huge guy.
I mean, we have him muted right now because
he can't say anything.
He can't say anything. So we can like talk him up and everything right now.
I said
now.
He's a huge guy, but he's really not. But he's a huge celebrity. How about that?
So while he's muted, we can't hear him at all, can we?
That's right. He's probably over there yelling and screaming.
But he still hears us.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So anyway... Yeah, welcome back to the show. We always love coming over here to the Trawick's house and eating and
yes. You know,
recording the podcast. We haven't eaten yet.
We haven't eaten? Or is it Aiden?
No, it's not Aiden for sure. We have not ate yet, and we have not eaten yet.
We have not eaten yet, but we will soon. So just to remind our listeners, we're still in January, and we are talking about productivity, maybe mixing in with a little bit of marketing because this person that we're bringing online is absolutely amazing. I'm going to go ahead and turn him off on mute now. What do you think?
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay, well, we're off mute, so you want to introduce our guest? The one and only.
Joe Edelman.
Yay!
Where's
huge?
The
really? Is that the best adjective that you guys could come up with? Huge?
Huge.
Like, come on, man. How are you?
He is amazing. So let me introduce the listeners in case they have not been listening to our previous podcast and are not realizing the importance of this gentleman in the industry.
Yes.
Oh, please.
No, seriously, okay? Because I want to say, as a full-time photographer and as a podcast...
Host,
there you go. Hostess with the mostest. I think some people believe that we don't spend money to learn, and we actually do. And Terry and I paid for Joe's workshop. Didn't ask for a freebie. Even though we're friends, I paid for the workshop to support his educational efforts, and I have to say I was blown away, and this is the first national speaker that has not only a great understanding, but pushes the importance of the inverse square law of light. Booyah!
Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you.
Okay, well, so, I was waiting for Jim. He was on his phone.
I'm on the phone looking for a question. So
we can tell how important this conversation is. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we actually had our important conversation before the show started, and we can't divulge that with our listeners, but let's just say...
He's full of knowledge.
Oh, my God. If you have a chance to check out his YouTube channel, you will be blown away. You will be hooked. Please hit the subscribe button. Ding the bell so you know when he has new posts coming up. You know what? One thing I do want to say, because I have to, I'm not apologizing, Joe. I highly respect you. I joined his Facebook group, and it is not like any Facebook group you have ever been in to
That's right.
with photographers.
That's
Joe expects you to work.
Mm.
Yep.
This is not a group where it's like, oh, pretty photos, like yep. hearts and unicorns. He will rake your ass across the coals if you are not doing the work.
Well, now you gotta let me give some context now, Robert. Okay,
so, of course.
So
go
the
ahead.
Idea of the group is, you know, there are obviously thousands of really, really great photography groups on Facebook, but the overwhelming majority of them are about posting your pictures, getting, you know, the thumbs up and kind of getting your ego stroked a little bit. And the frequently used phrase, which is the worst phrase ever, getting constructive feedback, or worse yet, constructive criticism. And there is no such thing as constructive feedback and constructive criticism when a person has just posted a picture, or even, let me give them a little bit of credit, maybe posted the picture and said, well, here are my settings. It is absolutely impossible with that context, a picture and settings, to give any kind of constructive feedback. So in my group, I make it really clear. I'm not interested in comments. I really don't care about stroking people's egos. And it's not about knocking people down either. But what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to help people based on my experience, not based on what's right or wrong, not based on some set of rules. Rules, that's a four-letter word, rule, avoid four-letter words. So in order to post a picture in my group, you have to tell me, number one, why did you take the picture? Of course, because some people like it, and sometimes there is value in it. I want to know the settings, and if it's done with strobes, I want to know what kind of lights, where were they placed, what kind of modifiers. But the real important stuff, I want to know, what obstacles did you have to overcome to make this shot work? Are you happy with the outcome? Is your subject happy with the outcome? It's primarily a portrait photography group. And then the big questions. If you could do it again, what would you do differently? And I make it very clear. If you are thrilled with your image and there's no room for improvement, don't waste my time. Don't post a picture. Because I'm not interested in looking at your photographs. But if there's something that, and by the way, part of the context behind that, I have never taken a picture in my entire career that I am not able to look back on and say, you know, I wish I would have done this. Or it probably would have been even cooler yet if I would have done this. That's part of how I move myself forward in my career. And then the last question, which kind of goes along with that, what would you do different is, you know, is there anything specific that you're looking for feedback on? And the key word in that sentence is specific. I will get people that come in and very innocently, they'll be like, well, you know, problem is I'm kind of new and I don't know what I could do to improve it, or I don't know what would improve it. And I push back on that. I have no patience for that answer because it's a lame answer. You don't have to know the technique. You don't have to know it's a different composition, whatever. You have to simply look at it and be honest with yourself. Does it really hit the mark or doesn't it? And if it doesn't, what do you think you need to do? Because then with all of that context, all that information I'm asking for, that's context, now I can say, all right, cool. Based on my experience, this is how I would have achieved what you're discussing. This is how I would recommend you try it. So then I can give feedback that is constructive and it has context to it. Otherwise, constructive criticism for a single picture that's posted online is just a bunch of hot air. It's pointless. I don't care who gives it. It's pointless. So that's the idea behind the group. That's the way it works.
Oh no, I'm just scared.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna lie to you. I go in there and I'll lurk around, and listeners, I challenge you to join his Facebook group and spend some time reading the comments that Joe has, because even though you might feel that they're mean, I don't know what other word to say other than mean, and I know that's not a good word. He really wants the industry and he wants the photographers to step it up. Okay, just because your mom and your friend and your girlfriend said that was an excellent photo and it's amazing doesn't mean that's really true. And if you try and go make money with that image, you may fail.
Right, and it's worth noting, Robert, too, that I actually don't comment a lot. What I do is once a week, sometimes once every week and a half, I do a live stream into the group and I will review the images live so that, number one, people can see me. Number two, that allows me to better describe things and give examples of what I'm recommending. And so there, those, you know, those reviews, they're archived in the group. People can go back and review them. I put a little note that says, hey, I reviewed this image on such and such a date. I don't suffer fools well. Let's put it that way.
Oh, no.
You know, learning, everybody says they want to learn, and then they go watch damn YouTube videos, says the guy on YouTube. And the problem is, you know, YouTube videos are not learning. They're simply not. My YouTube videos are not learning. My YouTube videos are a resource. You only learn if you watch the video and then go pick up the damn camera and try to do what you've just learned. Okay, that's the only way you learn it. Knowing it academically doesn't mean you actually know it. And it certainly doesn't mean you understand it. You've got to experience it.
Like reading a book. You gotta read the book and then practice it as you go along, if it's a photography book.
Right. Yeah. So in the group, I do set very high standards in terms of, posting an image, it's a little bit of work. Learning requires work. It requires effort. And I respond in kind. The more information people give me, the more in-depth my reviews are, the more information I'm able to impart, the more guidance I'm able to give them. And it's never about a right or wrong. I mean, for those that follow me, I'm the first one to admit if I don't know something. I teach from my experience. Unfortunately, I've been at this for way too long. So that's where, you know, that's where my guidance comes from. It's not something I learned in a YouTube video. It's not something that's necessarily even a popular opinion. I don't care about what's popular. I care about what I know works. And then it's up to that person to take that and use it and try it. Because the only right and wrong in photography has to do with physics. We can argue the right or wrong when we're talking about physics. Everything else is completely subjective. So there are no rights and wrongs in that regard.
So Joe, or listeners, actually, if you've not heard Joe or seen Joe talk or whatever, if you don't know Joe, you don't know.
That sounds like a t-shirt. If you don't know Joe, you don't know shit.
No, seriously. if you're sitting there listening to this guy going, God, what's his deal? Joe is passionate. He's passionate about the craft, and don't be offended by that. Okay? I know that some people take him wrong and they think, oh my God, this guy needs to calm down. No. He's passionate. I don't know Joe personally, but I've watched him enough. I've heard him enough that he's passionate, and he's actually a really nice guy.
Wait a minute. So you don't know Joe?
I don't know him personally.
I would like to say that I hugged Joe.
Well, good for you.
and the upside, Jim, he kept his shirt on. That was good.
Oh, yeah. No, that is good for you, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you might have to go back on a couple of episodes on that one. That was that was quite interesting. Yeah. Well, Joe, so along the same lines to our listeners, and I really just applaud what you're doing.
Thank you.
I really feel that... And there are great instructors and educators out there that have great information, but you have a method to your madness on making a difference in the industry and mm-hmm. making sure photographers are not lazy or lackadaisical. Right. And I really appreciate that. So that's why we're so excited to have you this month talking about productivity, marketing, et cetera. What are mm-hmm. the goals that Joe Edelman has for 2020?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
To survive that? That's the number one goal. But, from there, this year, actually, I did a lot of, shall we say, self-reflection and kind of a lot of self-review of what I've been doing for the last 4 years at the end of 2019. It was basically 4 years ago that I came up with this crazy idea, and my wife amazingly was willing to support me in this. But the idea being that I wanted to really kind of switch gears and begin educating full time.
Wow.
I've been in the business for so long. I started as a newspaper photographer. I've done portraits and weddings successfully. I've done commercial advertising. I've done a little bit of everything. And admittedly, you know, I'm getting to a point in my life where I'd like to slow down a little bit. So that was the first flaw in my plan, because for the last 4 years, I think I've worked harder than I have in my entire career, but that's not a complaint. I love it. I love the opportunities that I'm having. But as I came to the end of 2019, I was realizing that I was finding myself frequently very frustrated. As you guys have mentioned, some people joke about it. Some people just think I'm crazy, but I am. I want to see people succeed. I am not one of those photographers that looks at the current landscape and thinks it was better 40 years ago when there were fewer photographers and when photography was not as accessible. I think it is amazing that people can go out and buy a camera system and in a very short period of time actually be taking some decent pictures. But the fact of the matter is, regardless of all the technology you have, at the end of the day, good photography is good photography. That requires knowledge, practice, experience, etc. So you don't get to watch a couple YouTube videos or take a workshop or take a class and then boom, you're there. So that's kind of been my space, is really trying to say to all these people that are not necessarily being realistic about what they're trying to do, to say, look, you can do this. Anybody can do this. However, don't think you're going to shortcut the process, because you're not. It's kind of like when somebody comes to me for an acting headshot and they're like, yeah, you know, I want to be starring in a movie like next year. I'm like, good luck. You know, and I tell them, go to IMDb, look up the biographies of any actor or actress that you admire, and I guarantee you'll find it took them at least 10 years, minimum 10 years of acting before they got their first feature role. There are no shortcuts. And photography is no different. There are no shortcuts. So I was finding myself towards the end of the year just getting a little frustrated and feeling that I was missing opportunities to really connect and get the message across. I mean, it's great when people compliment you for what you're doing and you get all kinds of positive, you know, statements and that, but I was still finding certain topics and certain things that no matter how hard I try, I am not. And Robert, you joke about the inverse square law, but that's probably one of them. I mean, you know, still trying to get people to truly understand the inverse square law. It's really not that hard, but it takes practice. It takes practice simply because you've got to actually, to understand the inverse square law, you've got to embrace failure. You've got to be willing to screw stuff up and then kind of fix it. And the problem that so many people have, simply because they're lazy, is they want to be paid to do that. They don't want to do it on their own time. So the only time they do any practice is when somebody's putting money in their pocket, which I find to be offensive. The idea that you're going to get somebody to pay you to learn photography? No, no, no. You're going to get somebody to pay you. You better know what the hell you're doing, and you better deliver a great product.
Exactly.
Right? That's any industry, anything. That's just simply how it is. So for me, that's been the big thing. It's kind of just reevaluating the things that I'm doing, the way that I teach it, looking for different ways to connect. I had the incredible good fortune about a year and a half ago to become an Olympus visionary, and that meant that I also did a ton of traveling last year, which made it really hard just from a time standpoint to get the tutorials out on a regular basis.
Right, right.
And so I was doing my talk chat, my weekly live stream and that, and built a decent-sized audience with that, but also realized that I needed to find a way in terms of scheduling myself and my time to get back to the tutorials because I realized that ultimately – those tutorials are something that kind of lives on forever as a resource and a reference. And they're, you know, much more specific than the live shows that I was doing. So that's kind of been my big push is coming into this year is, I'm not going to be able to do them weekly, but I'm, you know, aiming for like every week and a half, 2 weeks, being able to get the tutorials out there and continue to provide those resources, which is a lot of why people followed me. But still do the live stream, the talk chat show on Wednesday nights, and still continue to travel and do presentations.
Wow. So it sounds like you're just kind of moving things around and trying to figure out where the best use of your time is. I guess the most bang for the buck. So in that effort, what would you say was one of your biggest or most useful tools you couldn't live without every day?
As far as actual tools, wow.
Not the camera or the frying pan.
Yeah, so, you know, interestingly enough, I think probably what I have done, it wasn't so much a big decision where it's like, okay, let's turn this corner. I think it's been a little bit more of an evolution. But actually in the last year, a little bit of what I have done is kind of walked away from tools.
And
what I mean by that is, you know, I'm admittedly, I'm a little bit of a kind of a tech nerd and I love when a good software solution comes along that, you know, has really cool organizational tools and things like that. Like actually a really good example, there was a program that I found called MindMeister and, you know, it had a nominal fee. It was probably like, I don't know, maybe like 10 or 12 or 20 bucks a month, but it basically allowed you to create mind maps, which are a great organizational tool. I admittedly had never heard of this concept of mind maps, but I signed up for their free trial and tried it out. And I actually did one or two videos using this as my kind of structure for putting everything together and got really excited about it. Like, oh my God, this is great. Signed up, you know, paid the money, the whole bit. And then a couple of months later, kind of really realized that while, yes, it's a really cool tool, I was investing a lot more time because of it. And it's not like it was making better videos for me or, you know, things like that. I liked the visual aspect of it, but it wasn't actually helping me get videos out any sooner or any quicker, especially last year when I was really busy traveling. It had actually slowed me down because I was spending more time, you know, playing with these mind maps and trying to move things around and get things perfect. So a big part of the evolution I've gone through in terms of productivity tools is actually trying to cut a lot of things out. I dropped quite a few of the tools that I'm using and realized that Google Drive, as an example, is you know, an incredible set of tools to work with. The one tool that I pay for that I will probably never give up, well, I shouldn't say never, never is a bad word, but until Apple or Google makes some big changes in their programs, and that is Evernote, especially now that Evernote has templates. So I have templates that allow me to very, very easily keep information organized about speaking engagements that I have coming up and the models that I have to hire and the makeup artists that I have to hire. And I have templates set up that actually help me kind of plan out my videos, plan out the shot needs and that kind of stuff. So part of the key was taking the time to actually create the templates. But right. then once they're set up, it's just one click, boom, and you're filling in the information. And if you've taken the time to create a good template, it's a very visual kind of thing. So at one glance, when you open up any given page, you're able to see what's missing and what information you need yet. So it's kind of like also like, hey, these are the things you need to do to get ready for this.
I got a question. I got a question about that, the template.
Yeah.
Is that something that you have done yourself, or is there a template option in Evernote?
Both. So they have a template option in Evernote. Like many scenarios where, you know, you're finding free templates, which, you know, you can find free templates for like the Google, Google Docs and Google Sheets and that kind of stuff. You can find free templates, for all kinds of different organizational tools, but they're never quite exactly what you need. So right. in my case with Evernote, I've taken a lot of the templates that they have available and started with that and then modified them.
I just looked in Evernote right now, and I've never seen that.
If you would see the look on our face right now while you're talking, we're just sitting here going, what just happened?
Yeah. I know.
So you can take, like, you can find a template that's kind of like what you want to do and just start a blank note and then go in and edit that template. Don't put any of your actual information in. In other words, think of it still as I'm editing my template. And edit the template the way you want it, even change the colors, because, of course, I hate their green, big deal, so I change it to something else, whatever. But change the template to the way you want it, and then you can save that note, that open note, as a template.
That's
and then
crazy.
It's your own template. And you'll see in there's a tab there for, like, their templates, and there's a tab there for your templates, like my templates. Hmm. And then you basically create your own templates, and you work from that. So, again, it's, you know, putting in a little bit of effort. But I've actually downsized on a lot of productivity tools. And it's worth noting, I am an OCD organizational freak.
I'm not surprised.
But literally, I had reached a point where I was actually just killing myself by using too many awesome tools.
Right.
That I kind of didn't really need. I needed to be able to find kind of, you know, the path of least resistance, the shortest distance from point A to B. And the problem was I was throwing a bunch of technology in the middle because it was cool technology and it was neat stuff, but it wasn't really making my job easier.
So basically, am I understanding that? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about what you're saying, and it sounds as though you have discovered in your way of working that you were spending too much time in the planning process with these tools that were really cool and not getting the work done.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. I'm blown
hands
away.
Down. And in part because I'm so focused on being organized and things like that. You know, I'm kind of a cross the T's and dot the I's guy, but there's a reality and it's all about finding balance. So I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression here. I mean, if we look at some of the most successful entrepreneurs in history, you know, the Bill Gates and especially Steve Jobs is a prime example. You know, these were people that embraced an entrepreneurial concept, and excuse my language, but it was basically called break shit and move on. Okay.
break shit and move on.
Right. I mean,
I think we just have the title.
Steve Jobs, for all intents and purposes, was a perfectionist. But at the same time, he had no problem in his career having an idea, running with that idea, and as soon as he realized this idea is not functional, not doable, toss it aside, who cares, accept the losses that come from it, learn the lessons that you gain, and move on. And that's kind of the piece that I wasn't doing. So what I was doing is I kept collecting all of these things that, in one way or another, they were kind of helping me.
Right.
But they were solving small problems. And because I was collecting so many of them, I was actually making a bigger problem that I was over-organized. And I'm using way too many of these, what are referred to in the tech world as SaaS solutions, software as a service, okay? So it's really been a matter of saying, number one, I could save myself a ton of money if I drop some of these paid services. And number two, it actually really does, you know, simplify things in that regard. And if Google Keep, which is the Google version of Notes, or Apple Notes, if they were just slightly more robust, I would drop Evernote in a heartbeat. Because pretty much my entire world lives between the Apple and the Google ecosystems. So I'd be thrilled to be able to keep my notes. But Evernote at this point still has much better capabilities in terms of those templates, in terms of the ability to organize via notebooks. Apple's getting close with theirs, but they're not quite there. So for now, Evernote is still definitely a keeper for me.
Yeah, we did.
I think it's still an attempt.
Yeah,
it failed.
We moved Evernote notes into Apple Notes, and
right.
That was a giant thing. But it just wasn't
a disaster.
It wasn't there yet. So I'm back with Evernote.
Right. Yeah. And Apple's not quite there. I mean, they're getting better. You can do folders now, that would be the equivalent of an Evernote workbook. Mm-hmm. Can't really do templates in them yet, you know, so you're still a little bit limited. So for me, I think my big productivity thing for 2020 is I'm really just trying to simplify it. Focus on, you know, what is most important? What is it that I really need to accomplish? You know, even with regards to speaking engagements, which are important to me, because it's important to me to get out and meet the people that I'm doing the videos for. That's really, really important. You know, it's no secret the industry in general is struggling. You know, camera companies, accessory, you know, manufacturers, all these companies are struggling. So everybody wants to do education, but the budget for education it's getting really tight.
Right.
So I went into 2020 realizing that I was also going to have to work a little bit harder for these various speaking engagements that I want to do. And when I say harder, meaning as opposed to, you know, somebody calling me and saying, hey, we want to pay you this and send you, more a matter of maybe sometimes trying to connect two companies and saying, hey, listen, if you guys will split the cost, I can do this for you and this for you. And you know, me putting kind of the pieces together to make sure that I'm maintaining that volume and that consistency. I knew that that was going to be a piece of what I'd be dealing with, you know, this year. And so it was really just a matter of, you know, I've got to be able to simplify my workflow. And because my priority for this year is to still do as much travel as I did last year, but I've given myself a deadline every 2 weeks max. I've got to have a tutorial out. I don't want to push the tutorials to the wayside. Those are kind of what got me started in this process, and I still think those are where I offer the most value. So, you know, it was all well and good that I kind of took a year off and didn't do a lot of them because of these other opportunities that fell into my lap. But now it's time to kind of get back to that core piece.
Wow. So for our listeners out there, it seems like Joe Edelman's takeaway from this is going to be, look at your methods and simplify your life.
Yeah, as much as possible.
And also, I wanted to say that we're talking about a lot of technology here. It doesn't have to be that way. If you are a paper person, by all means, go for it. I mean, but remember, simplify that. Try to simplify it to where you're not having to have all these different pieces of your business, you know, all over the place. You know,
right. And I think that's really the big piece of it. I mean, I'll admit, again, I'm totally a tech nerd. I'm all about doing it on a computer. I'm not a tree hugger, but at this point, you can't get me to use paper. So I'm very happy to work with technology.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to overwhelm yourself with the technology that's out there, especially if you think you understand it, you think it's helping you. And that's where I got to the point where I realized, like, I'm using all these different pieces, but why? Like, you know, if I can get to the point where I'm essentially opening up two things instead of 15, I'm going to make my life a lot easier. And then even things like, you know, automated posting tools for social media and things like that, you know, because of some of the guidelines that are in place for Facebook, because of some of the guidelines that are in place for, you know, Instagram, et cetera, none of these automated social media tools are able to do kind of a seamless job at this point. So regardless of which one you choose, you still have kind of these outlier pieces of your social media that you've got to deal with manually. So I kind of started to look at it from the standpoint of, you know, am I really saving myself any time with them? And so even in that sense, now I do most of my social media posts manually at this point, but what I'm smart enough to do is I stay organized with them. So I'll just kind of type out the post in Google Keep. And then, as I'm typing it, I will keep in mind, like, what can I put on Twitter? What can I put on Facebook? What can I put on Instagram? And then that syncs immediately with my phone, or sometimes I'll just do it on my phone. But then I can go ahead and, you know, I can do the Instagram post from my phone. I can do my Facebook or Twitter posts from, you know, my phone or from my desktop. And it's really not taking me any longer than if I used an automated tool. And, you know, you've even got scheduling capabilities with Facebook and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's – and plus, like with YouTube videos, YouTube cares about the amount of shares. So if I'm using an automated tool, I lose the opportunity to get shares. If I do it myself, every video I post, I'm going to pick up 3 shares from Facebook because I'm going to post on my personal page, my business page, and in my group. I'm going to pick up a Twitter share, and I'm going to pick up a Pinterest share right out of the box. So that's 5 shares that I'm getting for every video immediately.
That's excellent. I remember someone mentioning that if you posted something, you should post to your business page, and then as yourself, go in and share it to your personal and to your other groups.
Yep.
Those count more than just a like or anything. And that was like giving you more social media clout, I guess.
Correct. And I the only time I don't do that is for my YouTube videos. Because if I had to choose between where I want more clout, on YouTube or on Facebook, I want it on YouTube. So for YouTube, I'm going to use simply click the share button underneath the video 5 times. And I'm going to share once to my personal page on Facebook, once to my business page on Facebook, once to my group on Facebook, and then once to Twitter and once to Pinterest. Any other social media post that I'm doing, if I've got something that's going on Facebook, yes, it's going to my business page. And then from my business page, it's going to get shared twice automatically, once to my personal page, once to my Facebook group.
Again, we're learning some great tips.
Yeah, I really believe that we didn't create this podcast to help people. We just did to create it to help ourselves.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, because we always learn
And stuff. You know, I completely understand. It's so interesting that this came up with Joe, because I really was expecting Joe to lay out a mind map plan of exactly the technology he uses daily from the time he got up to the time he goes to bed. And he's sitting here telling me to simplify. When I was up the other night late, going to my to-do list and organizing my list for the week, and I kept thinking, why am I spending 30 minutes trying to organize this? This should be more organic. It should be more natural.
Right. Well, a big part of increasing productivity, and this is a hard value to maintain, and I really wish I could credit the person that once told me this, but it's probably about 10 years ago. And this is commonly heard advice, so I don't know if it came from this person. But you hear this advice a lot. One of the policies that I try to maintain, and I fail frequently, but I try to maintain, is if I can do it faster than I can type it in a note or reminder or to do whatever, then damn it, I better do it. Don't take the time to type it. One of the places where we all fail miserably with that is our email. You know, first thing in the morning, because God forbid the world might have ended overnight, we run through our email and we read 16 emails, and now they're all marked as read, okay? But yet it still takes us 3 days to respond to them. Why is that? So, like, even that, I've really tried desperately. And again, I fail frequently. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it's really easy. No, it takes a lot of discipline. But I try desperately. Like, if I'm going to open an email and read it, it needs to be dealt with right then and there. It needs to be responded to, so that it's not hanging around in my inbox. Because I would rather, if I had the choice of be the guy that's going to respond right away or be the guy that's going to take a week to get back to you, I don't want to be that second guy, right? And sometimes, unfortunately, you know, I fail and I am that guy because I let something swirl around in my inbox, which is not a good habit at all. So, I mean, I think part of the downsizing, the productivity, there's a discipline element. And that's hard for some people. It takes practice. It takes a commitment. Kind of like it takes a commitment to actually pick up your camera and go practice, right? You've got to be committed to that as a value. And part of that is you have to understand and truly believe in what kind of time it's going to save you, because it saves you a tremendous amount of time. But the idea, if you're going to open that email, respond to that email. Done. Do it.
Well, I mean, and you know, this is something that photographers practice all the time. In photography, we're always trying to find the easiest, simple solution, lighting solution, to get the job done without having to drag out, you know, 15 softboxes and. And but we don't practice that in our daily life, and I think that is something important to bring up, is that we need to do that in our daily life. So I'm curious, for Joe Edelman, the man, the legend. So can you give us just a quick little, just a general schedule on how your day plays out? I mean, are you one of these 4 o'clock in the morning, get up and go exercise, or do you get up at 8, drink coffee till 10?
I wish I was. I'm not. I've never been a morning person. I'm married to a college professor who is very much a morning person. So I am usually essentially in my office or in my studio by 9 a.m. in the morning, fairly consistently. I will try to limit myself to no more than 30 minutes on email first thing. And then I'm going to dive into whatever projects I'm working on that day, whether I have follow-ups or things to schedule for talks and traveling and workshops, or whether I'm working on a video. And then I will usually early afternoon, kind of like after lunch, go ahead and check in on email again as a task. I will, and it's a bad habit, but I will keep an eye on email throughout the morning. And I try desperately still to remind myself, if you're going to read it, answer it right away. I will usually glance at social media kind of when I take breaks. If I take a break to get a soda, or if I take a break for lunch, that's when I will look at my social media. One of the big things I've learned in the last 2 years, so I have a feeling this is going to send our conversation in a whole other crazy direction.
Oh, but, yes, bring it on.
I do a lot less social media than I used to. And ironically, it's been awesome. Awesome in the sense that I have got more followers doing that. Awesome in the sense that I've been able to develop a much stronger identity around what I do on social media. I mean, with all the traveling that I do and doing the videos and that, you know, a good week for me, I will get in one shoot. I don't shoot every day like I used to, because I'm not paying my bills by shooting.
Right.
So part of that challenge is I don't have, you know, 3 or 4 shoots a week where I've got, you know, 5, 6 pictures a week to post. So as an example, one of the areas which really worked out for me, I, as much as I help photographers with social media and I talk about social media, I was very late to the game on Instagram. The idea of just posting picture after picture after picture after picture, I'm always one of those people that's like, well, who cares? Why should they care? So going into 2019, so basically a year ago, I only had about 2,400 followers on Instagram. And, you know, I would post pictures when I got a chance. If I went on vacation, you know, maybe I'd go ahead and post a vacation picture. But I was doing very little on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I was missing out. I knew I needed to change that, but I didn't know how. And then just on a whim one day, I was preparing a video. And so I had some good lighting diagrams, and I had a little tiny behind the scenes clip. So I posted like a 5-image post, you know, the swipe right type thing. And it got an amazing response, because essentially what I had done is I had created a little lesson on Instagram. I had the image. I put in the text of the post, you know, all my settings, talked a little bit about how it was set up. I had 2 behind-the-scenes shots and a lighting diagram and a little video clip. Got a great response. So that was kind of when the light bulb went on and said, hey, that's my thing. I don't want to just post pictures like, hey, look at my amazing stuff. I just think that's pointless.
Right.
And as shallow as it may sound, I don't enjoy looking at other people's pictures. So let me explain that before people think I'm really a jerk, okay? The whole point is, I photography for me, it's access to people. I photograph people. If I was a travel photographer, photography for me would be access to interesting locations, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, it's about the people. So, you know, I can look at somebody else's work and I can admire what went into it, but I don't get excited about other people's work because I wasn't there. I didn't do it. I didn't have that experience. I'm in it for my experience, and I'm very honest about that. So I don't feel there's any reason why other people should care about that. So since my whole thing, I mean, my mission, my YouTube mission, as I describe it, is to help photographers develop a better understanding of the hows and whys behind great photography. So this was kind of that light bulb moment where it's like, this is perfect. And especially since I'm traveling and I'm not keeping up with videos, I can teach little mini lessons on Instagram. So 1 year later, fast forward, I've got over 18,000 followers. So the idea worked. And it was actually me taking my own advice, because for years I've been teaching photographers, don't expect people to care about what you post online. It's not their problem to care. You have to provide value. If you're not providing value, don't expect people to follow you. Don't expect people to care. And so that was kind of my epiphany of, okay, I can provide value now. Now I can use Instagram and, you know, do that. But I post on Instagram once every week and a half to 2 weeks. That's it. Wow. So, and I've been able to build that following. You go back through my Instagram, you don't see me posting every 2 or 3 days. You know, there's a couple times where I might have posted twice in 1 week, but not often. It's usually every week and a half to 2 weeks, sometimes even 3 weeks. And I've been able to add almost 16,000 followers in a year. And it's because the posts provide value. So people have learned that if Joe's putting up a post, there's a lesson there. Go check out the lesson. It's not just, oh, there's a nice picture that he took. So that's been a big part of it. And then I started to adopt a little bit of that for Facebook. So I'll use Facebook. I will treat Facebook kind of along the lines of like, well, okay, so these are my friends here. So I'll tell them, hey, I'm going to be in Dallas to teach a workshop, or I'm going to be at WPPI to do this. So I'll do a lot of my announcing and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But Instagram is kind of like the mini, I call it the mini YouTube for me. When I can't get tutorials out, I'm still creating little mini tutorials
on Instagram. Now, have you tried the Instagram TV yet? I see that starting to climb a little bit.
I'm actually proud to say I have not done a single one yet. But let me explain.
I did one by accident, and it didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually the kind of person that will dive in on new technology just to try it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I have a TikTok profile, but I've never made a TikTok because I wanted to make sure I locked up the name pretty early on. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But because again, for me, and I don't mean this to sound like a diss towards other people, I don't want to just be sitting around talking about my life. Like even if you watch my talk chats routinely, people will ask me about things about me, and I'll answer them, but I try to turn a corner and make it about, look, let's solve problems. Like if you're going to spend 60 minutes with me, please don't spend 60 minutes with me because you find me entertaining. I don't want to be entertaining. Like, please tell me there's something that you feel I can help you learn. If so, tell me what it is and let's talk about that. Like, let's dig into that. The IGTV for me, certainly I could in theory do the same thing. I could turn it into lessons, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, when I'm doing a shoot, you know, I don't have a team of six people there. It's me and a makeup artist plus a model. So, you know, I'm already working with additional cameras to record B-roll so that I can do YouTube videos and that type of stuff to then turn around and try and do the IGTV thing. It's just a little too much. And I don't ultimately see the value coming from it. It's not to say that down the road, maybe I wouldn't try it, and try it a little bit more consistently, but, for me, on the educational side of things, having a mission statement was the greatest thing I ever did. And it was something I kind of dumb lucked onto really early in my process, which was 4 years ago, where I came up with that mission statement. In part, it was because of the program that I attended with YouTube, and they made that recommendation. But I already kind of had it at that point. That just allowed me to kind of really formulate it. Because the best part of it is now, pretty much anytime I write a blog article, anytime I make a video, anytime I'm doing talk chat, whatever I'm doing, I can hold myself accountable to my own mission statement. You know, is this furthering that message? Is it helping that goal? If it's not, then I have to really look at, well, then why am I doing it? What is the benefit? Not, you know, not just to me, but to the people that are following me for education. Otherwise, it's frivolous. It waters down my brand. And it's not really helping people. So like, you know, you guys were joking, and rightfully so, that, you know, I can be pretty intense, and, you know, I'm known for, you know, I don't have a lot of filters. So I kind of tell it the way I see it. Certainly that's not for everybody, and I fully respect that. But the way I look at it and the way I describe to people is, you know, at least when I was in school, there were teachers that I loved and I enjoyed going to the classes, and there were teachers that I hated. And then there were also, ironically, teachers that I was afraid of, because, you know, this was back at a time where, you know, paddles were allowed in classrooms. But there were teachers that I was afraid of that, ironically, I learned an amazing amount of information from that I still remember today. Yeah. Because while they were really tough, they were also incredibly passionate about, you know, their topic. So I think I became kind of a mix of several of those. But you know, the point is, not everybody's going to connect with every teacher. And especially, you know, in today's world, I think it's really important for anybody that really wants to learn. If they're going to put in the effort, they've got to find the right mentor. You know, they've got to find a mentor that they understand, that they can connect with. Certainly, they should be looking for a mentor that they feel really gives a crap about what they're doing. But I realize I can't be the educator for every single photographer. So, you know, it's going to be a fit for some, not for others. But having that mission statement, it really keeps me on track. And it's probably one of the smartest things that I kind of dumb lucked into early in this process, was coming up with the mission statement.
Well, I actually love that, because I... In the whole process of me adding my website, January for me was the preparation of getting ready for 2020. And mm-hmm. I merged my regular photography and my education photography website into one. And that was because of the dinner we had, and you made that comment of mm-hmm. why did I have two websites? Because I'm splitting my traffic when I have them on one.
Right.
And I've always liked things in threes. It makes me feel comfortable. So, like, you know, my Trawick Images motto is fun, fresh, and fabulous. And I mm-hmm. wanted to come up one for the educational website side, and I had one that was Inspire and something. And it just mm-hmm. wasn't Renaissance. It was there. It was up there as a placeholder. And yesterday, I was digging through some old notes, as a matter of fact, in Evernote, looking mm-hmm. for something, some content for the website that I had to just going to cut and paste. And I ran across mm-hmm. something that I wrote 3 years ago, and I just... the words were right there, and it was excite, educate, and now I cannot remember the other one. Oh, elevate. It was all ease. Okay. And I just thought, that's what I want to do. I want people to be excited about photography. I want to help them learn more, and I mm-hmm. want them to be elevated to do better in the industry. So that whole thing yep. was not so much a pat on the back to me as it is to the last question for you. Mm-hmm. is in our industry, because I really feel that a personal connection with you as an industry leader and an educator that's making a difference. There's mm-hmm. great educators out there, and I'm taking away from those people, but right. I feel that you are really standing above everyone else, that it's not just a pat on the back. You want the people to do the work.
Sure.
And I love that about you. So in our industry, what do you see as the major problems that new photographers need to overcome, or even mature photographers that need to overcome to be better this year?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a doozy, isn't it?
Well, it sounds kind of like a slam on people, and it's not. It's understanding that this is part of the human condition. I do a talk, in fact, here, I'm going to give you a little bit of plug for your listeners. February 12th. I'm going to be presenting in New York City for this year's B&H Depth of Field Conference. So I'll make sure that Robert and Jim have the link. But the best part of it is that you don't have to fly to New York City to see me. I mean, you're more than welcome to. It's free to attend the conference. But you can watch it live streamed in real time online at no cost. So I'm going to be presenting a talk there that's called Don't Be Afraid to Suck If You Want to Improve Your Photography. And part of what I talk about in this talk are some of the reasons why we don't progress as photographers, some of the reasons why we struggle, some of the reasons why we suck for the wrong reasons, right?
Right. Right.
And one of those reasons is that humans instinctively, so this is something that we all battle. We all battle this. Humans are innately wired to be lazy. From the beginning of mankind, we put a tremendous amount of effort into finding ways to simplify and streamline the process, you know, path of least resistance, so to speak. And we live in a world today, and this is not like the old guy complaining, I'm thrilled that we have this opportunity, but we have to realize there is a downside. We live in a world that is full of instant gratification. And part of that instant gratification I mentioned earlier, you know, cameras have evolved to such a degree that we can pick up a camera, heck, pick up a new iPhone or new Google Pixel and take pictures of an amazing quality with little to no skill, knowledge, or understanding of photography. So what happens is that frequently gives people kind of a false sense of accomplishment, a false sense of ability, kind of a false bravado. And as a result, it clouds the concept of, well, what does it really take? Because while the technology indeed is making photography more accessible to more people, which I think is wonderful, and while indeed it makes certain things so much easier than they used to be. I mean, as an example, you know, now that I'm getting up there in years, if I didn't have autofocus on my cameras, I would really struggle as a photographer. My eyes aren't as good as what they used to be. So technology is incredible. But in order to truly master your craft, in order to truly reach a point where you are going to consistently be able to produce great photography, and in order to truly reach a point where you are going to be able to have a creative idea and be able to bring that idea to fruition and to make it work, you have to put in the hard work. There are no shortcuts. Every human being is born with a finite amount of creativity. Now, if we put it on a scale, indeed, some people, they suck because they're higher on the scale than the rest of us. So we hate them a little bit because they're just so innately talented. However, they even still have a finite amount of creativity. And both categories, doesn't matter if you're in the bottom of the scale or top of the scale. And by the way, this all comes from legitimate cognitive psychology. So there's a lot of research on this. My wife, full disclosure, my wife is a cognitive psychologist.
Oh, okay, there we go. All right, gotcha.
So yeah, fortunately for me, she's not a clinical psychologist. I'd be in a straitjacket for sure by now. But so what happens is we all have the ability to increase that range of creativity we have. But indeed, if you started out on the bottom end of the scale, you're probably not going to beat out the guy that started out or the woman that started out on the top end of the scale. It's just not humanly possible. And I learned pretty early on in my career, I had a mentor that really dressed me down in high school because I had won a bunch of awards. I was kind of cocky. Like, things were going really good. You know, I was going to go to college for photography, the whole bit. And this guy really put me in my place. And then he let me sweat for about 3 days before he even came back to, like, follow up on that piece of the conversation. He was a teacher of mine. And what he did then when we returned to the conversation is he really broke it down and he showed me that I actually wasn't nearly as good as I thought I was and that I wasn't actually that creative in what I was doing. And this was at a time where I was doing a lot of, you know, photojournalism, and that was kind of my goal. So I did have this kind of very wrong philosophy of like, well, it's photojournalism, it's news. There is no creativity, which is completely wrong. There is. But nonetheless, it was an eye-opener. And what I realized coming out of that conversation and what I realized after kind of taking another really good look at my work is that if I was going to succeed, I was not going to be the most creative guy out there. So what I needed to do is I needed to find other ways to make my work stand out. So for me, one of the biggest elements throughout my entire career has been details. So, I mean, today when you look at my work, you don't see hair out of place. And if it is out of place, it looks kind of cool the way it's out of place because it probably took us 20 minutes to get it that way. you don't look at things and say they're sloppy. You may not like the style of work that I do. You may not find that interesting. That's cool. But nobody's ever going to look at one of my images and say, that's really sloppy. It's just not going to happen. And what that does, though, is it helps to get my work attention. It elevates the perception of my work and the quality of my work. And it was really about 5 years ago where I realized, you know what? I've gone through most of my life saying, well, okay, you're not that creative, so you have to do this. And that's when I finally said, why can I not be that creative? But in order to try and really push my creativity, I had to learn to embrace failure. And so that's when I started going into shoots, working with crazy things like aluminum foil and plastic and saran wrap.
Foil backgrounds are amazing.
Right. It's like, what can I do to make this work and not give up until I made it work and made it something interesting? that also kind of led to a big part of what I'm able to teach people now, to say, look at how stupid this is. I'm using aluminum foil. But if you work with it, and if you're willing to take some shots that really suck, and then look at them and see how you can manipulate and change it, eventually you're going to get to a point where it's like, look at this. This is really cool. And so I think the biggest piece for most people is to realize you got to put in the hard work. The technology, everything we have available, it kind of gives us this false sense of confidence. And maybe it's not even confidence, a false sense of what we are capable of doing. And I count my blessings to this day, as much as I really didn't appreciate it at the time, for the lecture that this guy gave me and for the eye opening that I got from it. And I've, you know, always realized, like, great, if you're going to pay your bills this way, you're going to have to work a little bit harder. And that's been the key for me. I've survived. I'm going on 50 years in the business. And it's been a matter of putting in the effort, putting in the time, and working my butt off.
Wow. Okay. So. And I knew we were going to go over this time because... Yeah. You have so much information. It just like pours out. Yeah. Like Jim and I are looking, and our jaw is on the ground. Like we're going to have to wipe up all of the drool off of our Roadcaster.
Right.
Please apologize to Terry if she has to do the cleanup. So.
Right. Yeah. I'll just have to apologize to her.
Okay. Well, you know, that is a great way to end this episode.
I think it is. Except for I think Joe should just go ahead and give us all of his... How can we find Joe? How can our listeners find Joe?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, obviously, easiest place to start is my website, which is simply joeedelman.com. You can find me on YouTube at Photo with a P, so P-H-O-T-O, Photo Joe Edelman. And then Instagram and Twitter are also just simply Joe Edelman.
All right, that's awesome.
What about your TikTok? I wanted to know about that one.
Yeah.
There's nothing to see there, so move along.
Okay. You know what? We'll put that in the show notes. Go follow Joe's TikTok for nothing.
Yes. Well, there's several Joe Edelmans. I'm like, well, which one is him? So.
Well, he's the good-looking guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's the good-looking guy with the Dickie shirt that has been branded.
That's right.
That is in my notes to go check out Dickie shirts. However, I'm not as slim as Joe is. I don't look good in a Dickie shirt. I'm more of a wife beater.
I'm thin, but I don't look good in the
Dickie shirt. I think you would.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I'm serious. His shirt, I'll show you the pictures.
That's just because you love me.
Well, I do love you. Well, Joe, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it. Stay on the line real quick. We're going to wrap up the episode, and we'll give you our many thanks in private.
My pleasure, guys. Always enjoy it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you soon. All right, listeners, we really appreciate the episode. Be sure to follow Joe. We'll send all the notes down below, and be sure to check out his live show, Don't Be Afraid to Suck, February 12th. We'll put the link in the show notes. I'm waiting for Jim to say bye.
Oh, goodbye. Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at treywickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.